You're listening to All Marine Radio, broadcasting from Costa Mesa, California, on the All Warrior Radio Network. All right, no music. We're in the expeditionary mode. Can you pull your chair closer? You're going to meet the Mountain Man Cato. And his name is Tim Adams. And so first of all, Tim, before we can ask your opinion questions, we have to learn about you like everybody else to know whether we should believe you. So,
Gil, Minnesota. I was born at the hospital just a few blocks away from here.
I didn't know that. I thought for some reason, because you were a Notre Dame guy, that you were you grew up in a different part of the country.
No. I was born here in Mankato, went to school in Notre Dame when I got my Navy ROTC scholarship there. And then did 11 years active duty, met my wife.
Okay, hold on. So you grew up here. How does military service, how does the Navy get on your radar?
Oh, everyone in my family served, and you had a choice in the family. You could either join the military, get out, then go on with your life, or you could get an education, join the military, and then go on with your life. And it was presented basically as those options for me, and I realized it out of small-town Minnesota life was to join the service, get an education, and I figured I'd just stay in for 4 years, but I ended up really enjoying the military service and the people that I met, so I decided to stay in, and I'm still dealing with military and veteran affairs today.
Talk to me. So you go to Notre Dame. You and I were just talking. Their quarterback will not play this weekend. Does that give you cause for concern?
It gives me cause for concern, but just like in the service, it's the next man up, and I'm hoping that Wimbush is able to step back and bring in a victory. Right now, they're number three in the polls, and I'm hoping that they go to a significant, if not the college playoff, at least to something really nice for New Year's Day.
Yeah, I'm a bit nervous. I'm not going to lie to you. The kid they have whose quarterback was not highly recruited, his name's Ian Book. He's been, I think, the difference between Notre Dame having an undefeated year and maybe by this time having a couple losses. And him not playing raises my anxiety level as a lifelong Notre Dame fan. So you go to Notre Dame. How do you decide on which branch of the service? You join the Navy. How does that happen?
That happens because I filled out all the paperwork, and the first people to answer back was the Navy ROTC program, which I had a more logical reason for. But I wanted to have my school paid for. And my dad was a Marine, and so I...
Whoa. So your dad's a Marine, but in ROTC, there's a Marine option with that, yes?
There is.
Okay, there is. We just substantiated that. So answer to us, what happened? And were you that kid that just, like, you were hating on your dad and said, yeah, I'll show him. I'm not joining the Marine Corps. What, is it that guy?
No. I'm that guy who joined in the 80s with the big buildup of the Navy, and I thought the Navy was a better option than joining.
Whoa, don't ever. You're the first person that's ever said that shit on this radio program. All right? I don't want to start this off on a bad foot, but wow. Okay, so you joined the Navy, and you wound up flying 46s. How does that happen?
When you sign up for the flight training program, we literally sat for about 10 months waiting to go down to Pensacola to get all that stuff going. And that was the spot of when you finish flight school. They say there's X number of jets per year, there are X number of patrol planes per year, X number of helicopters. When I was selection day for me, they said, we have filled up the jets, we filled up the aviation or the maritime. You're going helicopters, son. I said, wonderful. That's all the helicopter guys I met really spoke about how much they loved it, and the six guys raved about their lives. And so I said,
why did they rave about their lives? I mean, first of all, my favorite helicopter, the 46, and I used to love when I was on the Ranger, watch them do vert rev. It's almost like this aerial ballet. What did you do as a 46 pilot, and why did they rave about their life?
Because they got...
It's not like they were P-3 pilots got paid per diem, right? And they could haul all their furniture back from the Philippines. The P-3 community is a bunch of criminals. Okay, but 46 guys aren't like that, so why was their quality of life any better?
The guys who were my mentors going through aviation down in Pensacola were 46 guys. And so I got to hear stories of the 46 life, and I realized, okay, these guys really enjoy what they're doing. These are people who want to, that I want to emulate and become these guys later in my career.
talk to us about, you said you were one of those guys that were doing those vert reps. Is that its own specialty, or is that something you pick up along with doing, because it's a general, right, it's a multi-purpose helicopter that does windows. So tell us about all the different things 46s used to do.
Okay. Well, vert rep was really the main thing that we really enjoyed doing. And if you deployed on a supply ship, you would do the vert rep mission, but you'd also do what's called PAX mail and cargo. So you'd go to the carrier in the morning, pick up 13 people, 600 pounds of cargo, and 800 pounds of mail, go to the USS Cruiser, USS Destroyer, all the other ships in the battle fleet, and just land on everybody. And what we were allowed to do was just pure fun. We enjoyed our mission. We had some real high-speed people. It was just when they were starting to allow women into the field, and so we had women as well as men, and one of my co-people was Sunny Williams, who's now a NASA astronaut. She was the woman who hugged the Boston Marathon up in space when she was up in space. So we had some amazing women when they first joined the community, and so for us it was a very positive experience having women integrating into the 46 community.
Talk to me about the whole vert rep thing. For those of you that have never seen it, honestly, you'd watch it, and they have all this cargo slung below a helicopter. And it's, honestly, when I say it's like a ballet, I'm not kidding. So I like to fly with all that weight kind of with its own kind of, I guess, centrifugal force as you move. And then it ultimately, I guess, is part of that movement. So how do you do that?
Okay. On the bottom of a 46, there is a big hook, and it can hold thousands and thousands of pounds. And we will come screaming into the ship and basically turn our side to the wind, just like you're skidding a bicycle. You know how when you slow down and just kick your tail out, that's exactly what we do. The young enlisted guy will go up and hook up the cargo net, and it has a big pole, and you'll lift up the supplies, and you can fly 3,000 pounds of stuff in one big scoop of the net. And you go between ships, and they will have the entire flight deck of the ship pre-staged with 200 loads of supplies, and that will be enough for us to give food, supply parts, all that the carrier needs to stay out at sea for an indefinite time. So we'd pull into a port every week, 10 days, and then we'd do 200-300 loads to the carrier just on a regular basis.
What's it like to fly with that stuff below the aircraft? I mean, obviously it must feel different.
Yeah, it's like you are riding a bicycle and you've got like a parachute behind you or a piece of weight stuck behind you, and you can kind of feel it jiggling. But it's you can feel everything through the helicopter. It's a very visceral experience, and it's different than a simulator because a simulator you're just doing the motion with the eyes, but in the helicopter itself, everything is by feel. And once you pick up the trick, it's like riding a bicycle is really the best description. And you can feel that you've loaded on. The helicopter feels heavier. It feels a little bit sluggish. But when you're free, you've got not a lot of weight on you. It's like a hot rod. The 46 had a lot of power because we're meant to carry 12 Marines with their battle gear in the back. So have a lot of extra power. So imagine you've got a nice little sports car that's very, very nimble, and it's got a huge engine in it. A lot of times we throw stuff in the back and weigh ourselves down, but when we're not encumbered, it was a blast to fly.
You know, we don't have that capability anymore. Osprey pilots want to tell you that they can do what the 46 did, and I would tell you, based on my own eyeballs, they can't. Their ability to be as nimble as the in horizontal flight as the 46, I would say I have yet to see it. And there, the thing that the 46 used to be able to do, which is come in low, flare low, right, drop down, you run in the back, right, they lift up, nose down, bank hard, and they're out of there and within seconds. The Osprey is so slow in and out of the zone. I wondered, have you followed that discussion? Because, in my opinion, we've lost an incredible capability, which we could have used in Afghanistan, whack, 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 somebody shooting. Well, it would have been nothing for a 46 to come and shut down an affirm base, right? They would have just done it. Can't do that with an Osprey, though. It's a lot bigger. You know, they're China dolls, really. And but what that would allowed was it would have allowed us to take a squad and drop them behind somebody who just shot at us and put an end to it very, very quickly. And so our battlefield agility, in my opinion, has decreased, and we don't have that medium lift, nimble platform anymore. Have you followed that discussion and your thoughts?
Yeah. What the Marine Corps needs is a F-150 pickup truck, and the 46 was a wonderful in filling that role because you were quick to get around. You didn't worry if it bent or something happened to it because we had a lot of them, and you could go from here to there very quickly. And from what I understand of the Osprey, is they're very concerned that they only have a few and they aren't able to be quite as quick. In the 46, you can fly into an LZ, flare, be in a 10-foot hover, and the guys are already going down the fast rope, and they're out of there in 60 seconds, 90 seconds, and then we're quick in and out of there. I understand the Osprey does not have that same capability of spending so little time, and especially in a hot LZ. And so the 46 and the Marines that I spoke with loved the mission because they were doing actual things to get the guys where they needed to be as quickly as they could.
Yeah, that nimbleness, and it kind of, you know, the 46 did windows. It did everything. And it didn't have the same big footprint that the 53 had, so you had much more flexibility where you could take it and do it. So just, again, we had that discussion in Afghanistan in 2010, 2011, when we, you know, we said, you know, we could really use this. What about, talk to me about, when do you get out of the Navy and your thoughts about what you were going to do after the Navy? How do you wind up here in Mankato?
Well, for my wife and I, we wanted to come back and spend time with our kids being able to go to one school. And the real problem that the military has is the children pay a pretty heavy price for dad having a career, mom having a career where you're going PCS to Lejeune to Pendleton, Pendleton to Iwakuni, Iwakuni to Syncus Navier. I wanted to give my kids the ability to have a home, because when you think of home, you probably think of a place in Sacramento. I think of a little house here in Mankato. I wanted my children to have a home. If you've got a military brat, think of home. They think of this place, this place, this place, this place. Now that my kids are out of the house, I think, okay, I've accomplished one of the missions. I wanted to give my children that sense of home. And I knew that I could still stay and work with the military because that's something selfish for me, because I think that I get more out of working with the veterans. I realize that I'm helping them, but it helps me to feel better about myself and to feel like I'm accomplishing something every day to think I've helped veterans. At the same time, I'd be able to take care of my family. You know what? I wanted to take care of my family.
So how do you get jobs like this? For people listening, I mean, it's a cool job. You're working with veterans. You're helping them transition from active duty through universities to careers, and it's a huge step in their life. How does one get this job? Does this job come through university? Does it come through someplace else? The VA? How does this happen?
Okay. Most people who work for the schools are employees of the schools. What happens is the school decides if they're going to establish a Veterans Resource Center and how much they're going to staff and if they're going to provide a lounge, if they're going to provide any kind of a budget for them to do activities. This position is funded through the Student Affairs branch. Also, we get money from the Student Senate, because the Student Senate has a budget that they're able to divide up between the chess club and the registered student organizations, the Greek fraternities, sororities, and they give money to veterans each year. The reason you're here is because we were budgeted to have this special lunch for Veterans Day in recognition of veterans and their sacrifice. But also, I said, I would like to have a speaker come and speak specifically about veterans issues, and what's fortunate is your talk applies to civilians as well. And in case you haven't spoken to everybody about it, you do a wonderful job of relating how trauma is not just a military-only event. There are a lot of people in the real world who are dealing with trauma, and maybe we can take the veteran experience of how we can overcome trauma, apply those rules to civilians, and they can use that to help themselves to get better. I think that's the real secret of post-traumatic winning. But back to the original question, I apologize. Most schools are looking to hire Veterans Resource Center people, and they want veterans. They want people who are good at dealing with other people and can help shepherd them with what's going on. This position is the jack of all trades. I have some people who are dealing with I'm a 20-year veteran. I've retired. Now I want to do something else for the next 40 years of my life. I have a lot of young men and women who did their 4 years, are off their duty. Now they're using their post-9/11 GI Bill. We also have a lot of members of the Minnesota National Guard and the Air Force Reserve, the Army Reserve. They join at 18. They go to basic and AIT. They come out and they go to freshman year, and they're using that drilling to help pay for their school. And I'm just the guy who makes sure that they're getting their GI Bill benefits. I'm the guy who makes sure they get a tutor if they need a tutor. I'm the guy who helps them to get a parking pass. I'm the guy who helps them to register for classes. All the different things that a school does for a student, I help them get over that initial how to get yourself in school and be successful.
Would you recommend it to, in terms of quality of life? University life is pretty high quality of life. Would you recommend it to other veterans?
Absolutely. What I would recommend for people is if you feel like you want to stay tied into veterans, and the energy that comes off of this campus is amazing. I go home every day and I feel like I have done, well, not every day. I feel like I have done things on a regular basis to really help these young men and women to achieve their academic and personal goals. And what's nice is I'm not limited to just helping them with the classroom stuff. There's a lot of times that people come in, close the door, and say, I'm having trouble with my girlfriend, I'm having trouble with my husband, I'm having trouble with this, I need some help. We have resources available through the school and through the civilian side of the house, through the county veteran service officers, through the VFW, through charities, through other avenues to really help these people. And fortunately, thus far, I have not had to tell people no.
Which brings us to, how do you come across All Marine Radio and the whole basis for coming up here? You talked about it a few minutes ago, but how did you come across All Marine Radio? Because out of the blue, I get an email. Hey, you don't know me. My name's Tim. I listen to you. How'd you run across us, and when did the idea start germinating that the post-traumatic winning pitch would be good for these young veterans to hear?
A Marine buddy of mine said, hey, there's this guy who's given a podcast, and I listen to you on podcast every day because it's not at a convenient time because I'm at work. He said, you should start listening to this because this guy's really got some good knowledge of what's going on. And so I started listening to you daily when I'm out walking my dog. And I found myself nodding in agreement a lot when I'm walking down the street walking my dog. And I said, these are the type of messages that really would translate to this community of veterans, because a lot of them are dealing with trauma. A lot of them are dealing with that feeling of dislocation. And you've always said that you want to help people go from military service to being a veteran. And you may serve for 4 years, 6 years, even 20 years. You've still got 40 years beyond that. So that transition's a really important time to get it right. And you don't regrow benefits. If you accidentally waste your GI Bill, it's not going to come back to you. And so we want to help students to get it right the first time going through college. And I remember Derek Abbey, who was out in San Diego, what an impressive young man he is. And I thought, this is something that we could use the lessons that you've learned to come out and share with the people here in Minnesota.
Talk to us about the presentation. First time I've done it for a mixed audience like that. I mean, I've done it on the program. I've developed it. I've talked about it a lot. But the first time, what did you thought? You were standing in the back the whole time. You had kind of organized it. How did it go from your perspective?
You lived up to your billing. And I don't want to pat you on the back too hard, but the power that you bring because of your message is wonderful. You can also tell you're a professional speaker. You're used to being on a microphone and speaking to people. And once you were a little nervous at the beginning, it took you a few minutes to warm up. But once you could get some feedback and get that energy back from the audience, you just opened up. And the power of what you have to say is a very compelling thing. And I knew, I kind of hinted at what you were going to talk about to the audience just to kind of get them there. But then once you see what kind of a message you have, and the fact that it's not just, okay, here's a message, here's the problem, but you also give solutions. That's the the main thing that's really going to sell this talk to other audiences is everybody knows there's problems. Everybody knows that they can identify what's going wrong in the world. How do I fix it? You give real solutions to people that are not, well, at this step, magic happens, and then you're suddenly better. You come right up front and say, okay, everybody has to deal with their issues. Everybody's broken. The best day of your life is when you say, okay, yeah, I'm broken. I'm just like everybody else, but there's a future ahead of me, and it's not a bleak future. Because most guys that I know of who have injuries are very worried that I'm not going to get better. And as all of us have had to deal with things, you and I get to look at things from a perspective because we've got a little extra wear on the tires. But a young 23, 24-year-old guy who doesn't have the depth of experience is really concerned because I want to get back to a better life. I want to have a better future. I want as close to normalcy as I can get. I'm proud of my service, but I'm carrying this baggage with me from my deployment. You give them a vision of a future that says, yeah, you're going to have that baggage with you, but here's some help in caring. Here's some ways to shift it around to make it a little easier to help you with.
Were you surprised at the number of non-veterans that showed up?
I was not surprised because I really talked hard to the communities here on campus, and I told them this is something that is not just a veterans-only show, that you really want to have your students coming here because there is benefit to what this guy has to say. And fortunately, you lived up to the billing, and it's very rare that you have people coming and getting value out of something that's really geared towards a military talk, but the ability that you have of taking, here are the ways that veterans see trauma, here's what civilian sees trauma, these things are aligned, and the solutions that work for veterans will work for civilians if you're able to get that vision and make that vision applicable to the 10-year-old female who has had trauma in her past, the Elizabeth Smart situation, the domestic abuse, all the different ways that people have trauma in their lives. It's not just military, but a lot of the military answers that we have of, okay, accepting what your problem is, learning that you're not the only one, learning that you can deal with it, coexist with it, and then gradually, day by day, getting better with it. That applies to civilian people as well as military. And what I really like is not accepting the victimhood label, realizing I'm in charge of what goes on. Yeah, I'm going to have up days, down days. My cycle is going to kick in sometimes, but there's a goal ahead of me. Are goal-oriented, and even in the civilian world, just because he didn't serve in the military doesn't mean there aren't a lot of people who share similar mindsets with us.
I will tell you that we were sitting around afterwards talking when one of the veterans here said, looked at me and said, I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of people in the audience were not veterans. I said, well, I didn't notice. I mean, they all look similar to me. But as I thought about it last night when I went home, it made me feel great that they would look at a veteran issue and think, well, I'm curious what they would have to say, that they would have to say to me. I'm curious, in that whole pitch of post-traumatic winning, do you have a favorite part of it, a part that you like the most?
What's nice is there was nothing new. I've heard you talk about all of your ideas throughout the course of listening to your podcast over the years. It's the fact that the truth doesn't need to be sold is probably the one line that sticks with me the most. If you're giving somebody BS, they understand, okay, you kind of need to massage this. But when you're just plunking it down and saying, here are facts, you can deal with them or don't deal with them, but it's not going to change the truth that this is the truth. And people nowadays are used to having spin, they're used to having news, they're used to having people telling them something that they're trying to sell. What I like is the fact that you're just coming out here and saying, here's the truth, and it's not going to change whether you accept it or not or whether you like it or not, but you do need to deal with it. You've got to deal with reality on reality's terms. You don't get to make those decisions. Something that's really important is we're not just here to deal with veterans. A lot of what I consider my job to be is dealing with the civilians and making sure the civilians learn how to deal with us. We've had 7 or 8 students who have come in and said, I've got drill weekend, but my instructor doesn't want me to leave. They're going to mark me down because I'm missing a Friday. Every instructor I've gone and spoken with and said, yeah, this student legitimately has a mission they're supposed to do on this weekend. They're going to be up at their drill weekend. Every one of the civilian instructors has said, wonderful. I just didn't know. And it's a communication issue between us civilians, or between the military and the civilian side of the house. As military veterans, we need to be more forthcoming. We're used to the lingo, we're used to the acronyms, and we have a difficult time translating from military speak to civilian speak. So it's incumbent on us to learn to speak their language, because they are not going to be able to really pick up on the way we talk. And so I have had good cooperation, wonderful cooperation here with the rest of the faculty and staff once I explain things in terms that they're able to understand. And so everybody who's transitioning out of the military realize that the language we speak doesn't translate over, and you need to make an effort to talk to people the way that they can communicate with. The social work department has been wonderful with us. This semester we have 2 social work interns who are coming and spending time in the Veterans Center just so that they can learn more about veterans issues, because these young men and women want to go and work with veterans in the social work world, helping them with county resources, getting them up for success with the people that social workers deal with, because a large percentage of people that they interact with are veterans. The better they're able to understand us, the more they can speak our languages, the more that they can just understand the mindset that we have, the better the workers are going to be. And I really want to thank the people in the social work field who are coming and helping us, because they want to help veterans. And these people who are coming in here and spending time with veterans, it's kind of funny, because the first time that a person comes walking in, and for active young women, and all the veterans are, but they're here to help us. And the veterans are doing a good job of embracing them and helping them to learn as much as they can about the veteran field. And so we're really starting to make things happen with not just the veterans, but with the rest of the school learning more about us as well.
What about when, so when I look at this pitch and ways to improve it, do you have any thoughts on that in terms of, you know, post-traumatic winning, what I essentially call the gospel of post-traumatic winning? And then I kind of run that into the mental health path of a warrior. And it was really interesting afterwards last night, just about everybody that came up to me came up and said, why don't we get taught this stuff? I mean, it would make so much sense to get taught this stuff on the front end, so when we did bump into it, we would go, they told me that this was going to happen. Any thoughts on how to improve it?
The problem that you're going to face is you are one front of small audiences, and seeing your face, hearing the emotion, the power of what your message is, when you blow that up to a large auditorium, they're not going to see you and be up close enough to really feel with you, because it's going to be a much less personal setting if you're in a bigger 500-person auditorium. What really makes your message powerful is the fact that it happened to you. You've really got some wisdom built up over years of having life smack you upside the head a couple of times. And so how do you take that message and ramp it up while maintaining the integrity and the power of your message? That's the real trick, and I don't have an easy answer to it. Nobody has a really easy answer to that. I was lucky. I specifically picked a room that was a smaller room so that you didn't need to have the 200 distance, hey, all you people over there, I'm Mac speaking from on high. Listen to me and behold my wonders. It was, you're standing in front of a group of people, and you're really able to relate to people, and you can look people in the eye and see the reaction. You are going to have difficulty standing in front of 500 people, because half of them will be out with their phones. Nobody had their phones out yesterday. There were people taking notes to write down ideas, but it wasn't because they were distracted. It was because, hey, this is good stuff. And so I don't know how, and we need to put some brain power into thinking of how this message can go in a bigger scale, because if you're standing in front of a division, it's a different talk than if you're standing in front of a group of 40 people. And I will put some brain power, and you and I can talk about it, but it's something that really needs to happen, because if you're only talking to groups of 40 at a time, it's going to take forever to put the gospel out to everybody who needs it. You need to expand to a bigger platform.
What is the most powerful part of the message? The thing that I never really when I started All Marine Radio was I never imagined taking it to the civilian world. And so to me, and in so doing, allowing veterans to contribute to their communities, allowing them to experience those Grinch moments when I talk about. And I love that. I love that visual because everybody knows a Grinch and everybody knows the scene that I'm talking about when he hears the Who people talk. But they are wonderful moments. And so the going from coexisting and living with it to booting it in the face and winning is something that's, I think, really cool about our culture. So that's one of my favorite parts of it in terms of this is how you win. This is the experience you'll have. And if you can understand these things, if you can embrace it, and what I do is I said I came here to make you disciples of post-traumatic winning. So I'm curious if you have a favorite part.
My favorite part is hope. You get to the point where, okay, here's what's going on, here's the reality of the issue, but there's hope, there's light at the end of the tunnel. Because the reason I think that most people give up is because they don't have hope in their future. Your message gives them hope that, okay, things have happened to me, whether it's good, whether it's bad, I can tolerate it up to today, but I don't see a path beyond the week, beyond the month, everything else. And I think that the reason that most people have suicidal issues and want to hurt themselves is they don't see a future that's better than today. Your message gives people hope that tomorrow is going to be better than today. The day after that is going to be better than that. I can overcome anything that's happened to me in my past if I have hope. If you've lost hope, even if you've got the world going for you, you're not going to want to get out of bed in the morning. Hope is what gets me out of bed. It's what makes people want to come to school. It's what makes people want to work with their family. It's what the world is driven by. You give people a sense of hope.
I want to switch gears with you and talk about veterans and your observation in dealing with veterans. Obviously, a horrible incident the other night in Thousand Oaks, one that I think when I heard that he was a Marine, it was just like, no, you know, please, what the hell? I mean, it's terrible when we have people that take their own lives. It's unspeakable, the anguish that you feel, the anger that you feel when not only do they take their own lives, but they take a whole series of innocent lives of people who didn't do anything to anybody to deserve that. And it's just horrible. Do veterans struggle coming out of the service? Are we doing good by them by the way we transition them? Do they come here pretty much okay? Give us a sense of what you see as somebody who's watched them for a lot of years.
They come here nervous because it's very difficult for everybody to transition out of the military because a lot of my, and I should use our, identity of ourself is as a Marine, as a sailor, as an airman or whatever. You need to get a new sense of identity, and it's kind of hard to do that as a student because everybody's a student. And you have a feeling of pride in your service, but by the same token, you're going, okay, am I going to transition back easily? What kind of obstacles am I going to face? Am I ready for them? In a lot of ways, the military takes care of us real well. Once you no longer have an NCO and an officer looking out for you, am I going to trip and stumble on things that I can't really forecast? So once they get through about the first semester, usually it's a lot smoother sailing. They've got their rhythm. They know how to study. They know the things that are expected of them. But the transition for all of us is hard, whether it's to come to school, whether to get a job, whether it's to do anything in your post-service life, it's a tough transition. What really is key, preparing yourself along the line. From the first day that you join the service, you should be thinking of, what am I going to do after the service? What type of career do I want to go into? The Marines, the Navy, Air Force are all just a phase. and you've got the pre-military, you've got the military, and then you've got the rest of your life to learn how to be the best veteran you can be. And the I try and find out from each person what's their main issue, and then try and find ways to help them.
Is suicide an issue here on this campus for veterans?
In the past 5 years, we've had five suicides. So, and it's veterans on this campus, and I know it's not just here in Minnesota. It's at all campuses we have veteran suicide. The age cohort of this group, the 18 to 25, is the age that most incidents with depression is going to start to happen in the general population. So the military kind of has that double whammy of we have a lot of traumatic things that happen due to military service. Also, we're right in that sweet spot of people first developing depression, other mental health issues. And we also, as a military cohort, are dealing with dangers, and we learn how to work with potentially dangerous ideas and items and everything else. The military veteran is, I mean, we have the 22 a day, but how do we get veterans to really realize that suicide is something that, that is a problem? We have the talks every 6 months, every annual training where, okay, here are the things that you need to pay attention, here's the two-hour prevention of suicide training. How do we get people to really embrace that and start to look out for the battle buddies? Because that nut has not been cracked because, as you were saying, the Marine Corps still has an issue with suicide. Marine Corps veterans still have an issue with suicide. I wish that there was an easier nut. And it really got it has to turn down to individual situations. And by us integrating prevention of mental health problems, prevention of suicide, training of at each step of your military career, entry, mid-level, when you're exiting the service, when you first start civilian life, and then later in life, if people see that there's hope at each one of those steps, there are ways that you can avoid going down that path of mental health, or once you're starting to go down it, okay, how do I get better before I get to the black pit that Winston Churchill described? Okay, if you're still on the lip of the problem, it's easier to solve than if you are not able to get out of bed for 2 weeks. Let's find ways to help them get the resources and the help they need and to realize there's hope and to have them reach out sooner rather than later. For you, it's your talking to your battle buddies. You get to talk for a few hours each day. I think that's your therapy to yourself. You feel like you're helping people. How do I get other veterans to their Grinch moment? For some, it may be working with a religious charity. For some, it may be the Salvation Army. For some, it's working with the VFW. For some, it's helping with kids. You need to find out what it is for you that's going to turn you into the Grinch. And that's the key, is for everybody it's going to be something different. No one size fits all, but we need to tell people that there are answers out there. You just need to find it and get it apply to you. Because once you start to realize that, yeah, this does work, and I can feel better about myself, it makes me want to get out of bed in the morning, it reconnects me with my family, I'm not drinking as much, I'm not taking a handful of pills, I'm able to get back to a better self. That's a magic moment, and once you realize that, the world's your oyster. We want veterans to succeed, and it takes a lot of people, and so that's what's nice about the social workers and the other people coming to help us. Civilians want to help the veterans. We just need to take that first step and show them how they can help us.
Is there something that's not being done for veterans, especially relative to mental health, that you would say there is a gap here that we need to address?
It's not so much that there's a gap. It's that the standards of what the medical field says, these are the answers for this diagnosis. And it's different for every veteran, and it's I've had small interaction with the psychiatric world, and so I am not an expert at all. But big groups want to come up with big solutions that apply to everyone, and it doesn't work that way with veterans because we're all different. And it requires one-on-one talking with people, one-on-one getting you help with your family, getting your help with getting life in order, and just speaking from my perspective. The things I always ask about are, how is school going? How is your family going? How are your friends going? And how are you feeling about that? It's kind of weird to talk about feelings because we're used to, no, suck it up and we'll keep going. But you can tell what are the important things to each veteran as I talk to them. And then I have to tailor a plan to, okay, your family's doing fine. You got good support with your girlfriend or your spouse. But we need to get, you've got a financial rut you're in. Okay, let's get that problem solved. Okay, your money's good. You've got, let's say, your disability. So you got a disability check and you're working with the accessibility resources here on campus. But you've got a problem physically. Your TBI is causing you to not to be able to do as well in classes. Okay, there are things we can do to help you. Socially, you're feeling awkward that you're not really fitting into campus. Okay, there are things we can do to help you fit into campus. We need a lot of veterans and some people with some experience to deal with students on every campus to really help them to work things out. The majority of students aren't veterans, the small group, but I can really tailor my message and my work to help each person the way that they want to be helped. And in some ways, it's helping me.
If you were king of the world and you could change, and you could change the way veterans are, because a lot of it's on us. And, I mean, we join the military forms us a certain way. And then all of a sudden, I talked about the word tribe and, you know, last night, and the power of being dislocated. You know, the death sentence for a tribal member was to be essentially banished from the tribe. And most of the time they would find that person had taken and had killed themselves. Our issues tend to be part the way we're formed by the military, and then trying to go back into a civilian world. Sometimes there's dislocation issues. I wondered if you were king for a day and you could change one thing, not five things, one thing. What one thing would you change about either transition, about service, about colleges? Do you have one thing that you would say, yeah, I would change that?
Yeah. The one thing that I would change is make sure that everybody gets out and gets over their initial bitterness or lack of, okay, I'm nervous. I just want to not deal with people in my stuff all the time. When you get over that initial hump and you start to work with everybody, that's really when it happens. To use an analogy, the POWs in Vietnam, the reason I think that they formed strong bond is they knew they had to rely on everybody. Stockdale put out a message to everybody that said, here is what's expected for you to do, and you need to take the ropes to get on the radio. You need to, you're not allowed to take food ahead of everybody else. Everybody in the Hanoi Hilton, because of Stockdale and Robinson Risner and the leaders, knew what the standards were, and they knew that the standards were not unreachable. They were high, but you knew that if something happens, there's a mistake, I can get back and fit in with my tribe. Those guys all knew each other very, very well. They literally would sit there on the floor and tap on the tap code, communicating back and forth. That gave them the sense of community. I'm a contributing member of this group. I haven't given up, still in the fight. I'm appreciated. I'm loved. And really the love that those guys felt for each other, because they knew Jim Stockdale was taking a beating for me. That's the bond of fellowship that just can't be underestimated. Those guys knew that there were people who would literally lay down their lives for everyone else. The military spoils us because that deep sense of camaraderie, that deep sense of this guy is willing to have my back and I can trust him. You come into the real world and you don't have that same sense of, you know, Mac is really going to sacrifice to protect me. He is willing to put my safety, my physical, ahead. He's sharing with me his most intimate things. People want to put that again, and I think most veterans are searching for that feeling of bonding that we have with our fellow veterans. And until you find it, whether it's with family, whether it's with your friends, whether it's at your work, you're going to be searching for it. And like what Sebastian Younger talks about, what is it that these guys, they might not like each other, but they're willing to jump on a grenade to protect each other. That intoxicating feeling of, I'm part of this group and we're all something special. It's really what we're looking for. And until people can feel that purpose and feel that Grinch moment, we're all going to be looking for it. And so as a veteran, you need to search for that, what it is that makes you want to keep going. And until you find it, you're always going to kind of feel like your life is a little empty. Once you have it, then you realize, okay, nothing's going to stop me because this is what I'm here for. I've found my purpose.
Final question. There's people that will listen to this that may entertain the idea of picking up the phone, writing an email, and saying, hey, Mac, I'd like you to come do that program here. What advice, why would you tell them to do it?
We are trying to build a sense of community here on campus. I want my veterans to, like, when they walk in the door of the Veterans Center, they're home, that they're part of their people again. It's part of their tribe. Once you start to build that identity, people want to participate. By Mac coming onto campus, we put another group together of people who are working towards a common goal, working towards making veterans' life better, and giving us all a renewed sense of purpose. What's nice about that talk is it gives people hope, and it allows us to realize there is something better waiting for us. It's worth working for. It's worth sacrificing for. And the talk that you gave and the talk you're going to give at the lunch today, it's an ideal opportunity for you to build that sense of community on your campus and find a way to make everybody's life better. Because when you have 200 people all working towards the same goal, everything gets much, much easier. If you're trying to do it by yourself, it's a notable challenge.
Sir, first of all, a lot of times people, you know, when you're a speaker, you thank everybody at the end. And I think speaking about this kind of stuff is different, right? It is for me. It is one of the great passions of my life. And it is that way because of the courage and selflessness that I've seen. Not once or twice a month in Iraq and Afghanistan, but every day. And it's not hard for me to get motivated. It's never hard for me to care. But thank you very much for having me up here. I can never say that enough. And an honor to be here, not only last night, but to speak again today. So thank you very much.
It's our pleasure for having you come. When I first kind of hatched the idea of, you know, it would be nice if you could boil your 6 months of messages down to one talk. I realized I was making a big ask of you, but I was able to get some resources together. And to be honest, I pitched to get resources specifically to have your type of a message come here onto campus. It's just a lucky happenstance that you are the person who are putting together those type of ideas into one coherent talk. I'm assuming that the 10th time you give it is going to be better than the first. The 100th time you do it, you're going to have your message tightened and everything else. The only thing that's going to be a problem for you is how do you keep that passion up? But what you have to do is there is so much energy in that room beside us. You can hear the veterans probably talking in the background behind us. I get to enjoy that every day. I'm sure there's some days where you're sitting in your studio and you're feeling kind of separated from everybody. This will help you when you come to campuses, when you sit down and have pizza and an adult beverage with these young men and women. That's going to have you riding high. I'm assuming you're not going to need an airplane to fly home.
All right. We're going to do that later on tonight, this evening, to have pizza and beverages. Beverage will be supplied by the beverager. We're going to take a break. More of All Marine Radio coming up next on your home for it, the All Warrior Radio Network.